Ladies. Adam left.
Love the cool things we can do, we can do, we can do. We love the cool things we can do on our computer.
When you need to talk technology, no one gets you more gigs in your hard drive than Adam. It's time for Adam the Computer Guy with Adam Lepp.
Did somebody say Adam Lepp? That's me. Good morning. Hey, thank you so much for listening. Really appreciate it. We're going to have some fun today. It's a rather special day in general here at Marion's Talking Place, WWGH 107.1 on your FM dial and broadcasting online 24/7 on your smart device, your laptop, your desktop. You name it, we are there. You just need internet access at WWGH1071.com. Scott will be live in the studio with some wrestling celebrities in about 3 hours. Of course, Charlie follows me. Don't want to miss any of the festivities here at WWGH. We're going to talk today's top technology topics. And again, this is the Adam the Computer Guy radio show with me, Adam Lepp, your friendly neighborhood computer person, information technologist. Hey, that's me. And one thing that I do here on the Adam the Computer Guy radio show is I provide people with free technical support. And I have about 40 years of experience with computers. So, you know, if your printer is not printing, your server is not serving anything other than junk, if your monitor is only monitoring your aggravation, your computer's memory is giving you memories of last time you had a problem with your computer, feel free to give me a call because I can often fix things right over the phone and you won't have to swipe your credit card or anything. No charge. And I actually thank you for calling because this is an audience participation show and your participation as a member of the audience is very much appreciated. Phone number here live in the studio at the Marion Center Mall is 740-383-WWGH, that's 9944. So pick up the telephone and give me a buzz. I would love to hear from you. We can also discuss some of the news articles that I have brought up during this show and previous shows. We've been doing the show for about over 4 months since the beginning of January when it was cold. It's nice and summery today. Enjoying the springtime weather. You can debate a topic. Of course, I am not one to shy away from opinions about Windows 10 or about maybe self-driving cars, technology in medicine, data privacy. We'll cover those topics and more. If you agree, disagree, not sure about something I have said on a previous show, feel free to let me know, and we can discuss it. It's always always appreciated. Of course, one thing that we bring up here on the Adam the Computer Guy radio show regularly, that's kind of a hard word to say, regularly, but I think I got it pretty regular. Anyway, is the iPhone. iPhones are constantly being updated, modified, and there's always a pro and a con side whenever that occurs. Now, there won't be a lot of design changes in the next iPhone, and that's according to a schematic photograph published online last Monday by a website called Nowhere Else. In fact, it's showing what is purported to be Apple's upcoming iPhone 7 to be the same size as the 6S. Kevin Kruel, an analyst with Tyrios Research, said, "They have done a lot with the design already. They are keeping multiple design languages to keep their customer base happy. The SE, for example, has the old design language, while the S and the 6 and the 6S have the new design language." Kevin Kruel said that mix is something they'll do more of. with the 7, they will try to push the envelope and try to get thinner. Now, one way to shed thickness would be removing the 3.5 millimeter jack for plugging headphones into the phone. But any increase in thinness would not be very much, as the jack doesn't really take up a lot of space. And that also comes from Wayne Lamb, a director and analyst at IHS. He said removing the jack isn't going to buy them much. More than anything, they would drop the jack to drop legacy connections and to make the phone waterproof. As I see it, a 3.5 millimeter jack is something you can't do without, because people may use Bluetooth or other methods of connecting, but you need to use those old-fashioned headphones or headset or earbuds. I mean, they have, I still call them headsets, but I think earbuds is probably the more correct term, as they're inexpensive and pretty easy to get and reliable. Bluetooth is not perfect, plus it can be privacy issues, so I really would be disappointed if they were to remove that 3.5 millimeter jack. Anyway, Jack Gold, I guess speaking about jacks, that would be a good name to have. He said that eliminating the 3.5 millimeter jack might be a sales tactic, and he is with J. Gold Associates. Now, he said Apple is of different mindset than most of the people in the industry. That mindset is, if we can change something and then sell you an accessory where the profit margins are high because of it, we're probably going to do that. So, don't iPhones cost enough already? So, somewhat shady marketing, if you'd like Adam's opinion. Of course, I'm Adam. Anyway, Jack Gold said they will say they took the headphone jack out to make a thinner device, but in reality, it's about selling a new set of accessories to users. While new features in an iPhone usually are designed to stoke enthusiasm in the market, removing the headphone jack could have the opposite effect. James Moore, a research analyst with Juniper Network, said the removal of the 3.5 millimeter headphone jack will dampen the iPhone 7's reception from some quarters, particularly among audiophiles who like choice. While an adapter will probably be available, this will probably not be enough. Now, as I mentioned, not a lot of change was evident in that schematic photo posted by Nowhere Else, but one noticeable change is in the camera department. The size of the rear camera in the iPhone 7, it is noticeably bigger than in previous models and closer to the edge of the phone. So you got to take those selfies and ussies and other things. So, of course, the camera is a high priority item. Imaging, in fact, will be the primary focus of the iPhone 7. There will be two versions of the 7 Plus, one with a conventional camera and one with a dual camera array. The features of the dual camera are still up in the air. The multiple lenses in the camera could be used for selective focusing or to reduce noise in low light situation. It's also been suggested that storage on the highest end iPhone might be bumped up to tablet levels. Unless Apple has plans to increase the size of the iOS software as a whole, we don't consider the introduction of a 256-gigabyte iPhone 7 to be likely. And that comes from Mr. Lamb of IHS, whom we quoted earlier. See, we quote a lot of experts on the show, and as you probably know if you're a veteran listener, I am not one to shy away from a wisecrack or my own opinion. Now, let me know what you think. Is this a step in the right direction for Apple, the improved camera, a possible retirement of the 3.5 millimeter jack? Give me a call right here in the studio. I am live in the Marion Center Mall, and I would just love to hear from you. The number here is 740-383-9944. Now, speaking of connection gadgetry on the iPhone 7, for the last few weeks, a rumor, that's a hard word to say, but I think I got it, rumor. That wasn't too bad. A rumor has circulated that the iPhone 7 would have a smart connector like the iPad Pro. Both data and power can be transferred through the port, so adding it to the iPhone would open the door to a new category of accessories for the device, including wireless charging. However, Mac Otakara last week threw some cold water, so to speak, on that rumor of the smart connector. But wireless charging in the iPhone 7 is a real possibility. Some degree of wireless charging is expected in the iPhone 7, but the actual specification remains to be seen. So Apple doing some, what I would say to be interesting marketing with the iPhone 7, kind of teasing us about the headphone jack, about the camera and the overall shape and feel of the phone, and the smart connector, kind of leaving us hanging just a bit. But that's always the fun of new technology, because you're never quite sure what you're going to get. And sometimes being the first person on the block to own the device, it adds to the fun. Adam Lepp here, Adam the Computer Guy, with my twice weekly radio show. We are live in the studio taking your telephone calls. Again, questions, comments, suggestions, even complaints are more than welcome. And if you have a question about the computer at your home or office, I would just love to help you out. No charge whatsoever, because that's the kind of guy that I am. The phone number is 740-383-9944. A beautiful spring day outside, about 27 minutes after 9 Eastern Daylight Time. We like to talk about medical technology. How has that changed in our lifetimes? How are robots, computers, and other things used to diagnose diseases and injuries and help people live longer, more productive lives? Check this out. Recently, a supervised robot performed part of a bowel surgery better than human doctors. Dr. Peter Kim, professor of surgery and the lead for the Sheikh Zayed Institute at Children's National Medical Center in Washington, D.C., stated that, compared to current standards of practice, the machine does it better. Now, along with this report, another article came out in National Geographic with the title, Meet the Cobots, Humans and Robots Together on the Factory Floor. Perhaps the surgical robot article could have been titled along similar lines, Meet the Codocs, Doctors and Robots Together in the Operating Room. You have probably heard about some of the controversy related to vaping and electronic cigarettes. The FDA will bar e-cigs from being sold to people younger than 18. There was some hope that e-cigs might help with quitting smoking, along with companion coaching and social support apps. But according to smokefree.gov, there haven't been any scientific studies that prove that e-cigarettes actually help people to quit smoking. There is also concern that using e-cigs may lead kids to start smoking regular cigarettes. There is no word yet on an FDA ban of tobacco cigarettes. And social media continues to prove itself as a valuable tool for health and social issues. According to one report, our social media updates may serve as an early warning sign for health problems. And Twitter, was used by an anonymous student as a safe outlet to report a rape. A Twitter account, @raped@spellman, was used to describe her experience and subsequent issues. This prompted an outpouring of support and an official public response from the university. So, social media being used in many ways to enrich people's lives and to report on events and get those reports disseminated quicker and more efficiently, and also definitely at a more cost-efficient manner. And I'm rather intrigued by the bowel surgery performed by a supervised robot. So give me a call and let me know what you think. Would you be comfortable going into the operating room with a robot doing all or part of your surgery? Number here at the station is 740-383-9944. My name is Adam Lepp, Adam the Computer Guy, and every Tuesday and Thursday, right after the 9 o'clock features, we get together and talk about today's top technology topics. Take your phone calls, your Facebook messages. If you want to become my friend on Facebook, that would be fantabulous. I'm a pretty friendly guy. Just look up Adam the Computer Guy, Lepp, that's me. Put a request and let me know that you are a listener to the Adam the Computer Guy radio show, and I'll be happy to become your virtual friend. How about that? Would like to pass along a community announcement. The Victory Center Food Pantry. It's at 1190 East Fairground Road. It is open today at 5 p.m. until 6:30 p.m. That's the Victory Center Food Pantry. Open up at 5 p.m. for an hour and a half, and it's at 1190 East Fairground Road. And, as you may know, there is a big event here in Marion, Ohio, this evening, 8 p.m. bell time, for the Spring Brawl, featuring Thunderbolt Patterson, Tony Atlas, and much more. Coordinated by our very own Scott Spears, a wrestling expert and all-around aficionado. Don't want to miss it. Tickets are $10 at the door. Festivities start at 7 p.m. It's at Tri Rivers, 2222 Marion, Mount Gilead Road. The Adam the Computer Guy show here with me, Adam Lepp. Visit my website for more information about yours truly, adamthecomputerguy.com. One thing I'm always interested in getting comments about is Windows 10. Are you not a fan of that operating system, like the way that I feel about it? Because basically, I dislike it with a passion, as I find it invasive. It does spy on you without even really telling you exactly what it's doing. And a common issue, one that I have had with my own clients using the operating system, is that sometimes certain drivers, printers, etc., don't want to work with Windows 10. And you get a little bit frustrated because you'd think that something is newer and these wizards kind of make everything fall into place. But in this case, it isn't necessarily the way that it is. So if you have an experience with Windows 10, good or bad, I would love to hear from you. Give me a ring, 740-383-9944. Also send me an email. Love to get your comments. If you are phone shy, that's fine. Email works fine too. I am usually available for email questions and comments around the clock. Love to hear from you. Right here at the station, you can email me, adam@wwgh1071.com. The next generation of broadcast TV is coming, whether you are ready or not. ATSC, another one of our catchphrases, abbreviations, it stands for Advanced Television Systems Committee. Now, they are the group which decides which over-the-air and other TV signals and what they should look like. Last year, about 3 out of 4 U.S. households subscribed to cable, satellite, or fiber for TV, while only 21%, that's a rather low number, even in 2016, relied on antenna reception for at least one TV in the home. But that antenna number actually went up 4 points compared to 2014, according to the Consumer Technology Association. One thing I've noticed is there are more of these sub-channels. For example, in Columbus, Channel 4, 4.1, 4.2, and they often have older TV shows, antenna TV, Get TV, older movies. And I often find these programs are better than a lot of the stuff you have on cable. And also, when you watch over the air, the signal isn't compressed like it usually is with cable, so the quality is better. You can buy an antenna for, you know, as little as $19, but I do recommend a better one. I spent $89 on mine. The reception is crystal clear. You don't have to worry about hooking up the cable. And you can get a lot of shows that you might, again, find very enjoyable. I'm certainly a fan of retro TV. I am a partial to Three's Company and the Jeffersons and other fine shows that are on antenna TV. So I'm not really surprised that that number is actually going up. Plus, as you can probably imagine, the quality of shows on cable, that is going down. A few too many reality shows that aren't all too real. Certainly there's news, but a lot of news also is available on broadcast TV. And in general, the quality of programming, the amount of repetition, I don't really see it as going in the direction that you would like to as a consumer who pays for cable or satellite television. But free television is in for some big changes, and it relates to the resolution, again, this picture quality issue. Back in the day, the ATSC, again, the Advanced Television System Committee, decided on 1080 and 720 pixel resolutions for digital and HDTV broadcasts. Now, in 2016, just about every cable or satellite show uses one or the other. But not surprisingly, up next is the 4000 or the 4K resolution, along with a bunch of other improvements. And those include high dynamic range, which we call HDR, better sound, even 3D, and access through your phone. As if a phone doesn't already do everything but scratch your back. And probably some phones can do that also. Now, their standards, and by extension, what is next for over-the-air television, will have effects that reach far beyond the people who get their TV via antenna. It could affect what you see and hear on your TV for years, or even decades to come. Now, the ATSC, the Advanced Television Systems Committee, is an international group of broadcasters, TV manufacturers, and other technology companies. If it is a well-known technology company, again, Samsung or Sony, etc., they probably have a seat at the table, so to speak. Originally, the ATSC was created to establish the then futuristic HDTV. And this was 25 years ago, and what that would involve. And that was 25 years ago, so we're talking back in, 1991. How about that? We've gone from the 1080 or 720 pixel standard to the 4K upcoming standard for the quality of TV pictures. Now, some other standards like Ultra HD TV has come fast and furious, but this 4K content is slowly making its mark. So the ATSC having a big hand in the quality and type of picture that you get on your television. And we'll be following this story, as certainly with what I pay for cable or even what I pay for the TV itself, not to mention the electricity to run it, I want the best quality and most reliable picture that I can get. I don't think that's asking too much. Adam Lepp here, the computer guy, with my twice weekly radio show. Give me a call. We can talk today's top technology topics. You can ask me questions. Again, complaints, suggestions are always welcome. 740-383-9944. Of course, following me is Charlie Evers, our local radio legend. Now, there's a man with a ton of anecdotes, like myself, not one to shy away from a wisecrack. He is a walking history book for Mid-Ohio, and he loves to take your telephone calls. And the number, again, is 740-383-9944. Some more technology news for you. This one kind of relates to security, a little bit of politics, and also the latest and greatest in technology. Those are a lot of the things we cover here. So I think it is quite relevant. On Monday, the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission, and the FCC, the Federal Communications Commission. When I was a little boy, I used to confuse those organizations, but as an older person, well, I'm older, I wouldn't say old, but older, certainly every day we get older. Anyway, I now know the difference. Of course, there are things they do that are in common, but they are very separate agencies. Anyway, they have announced a joint investigation into the issue of mobile device security updates. Does it kind of seem like your phone is constantly hogging you to do updates? Apps do updates? Well, then this story is definitely one that is relevant. The FTC issued an order requiring 8 mobile device manufacturers, Apple, BlackBerry, Google, HTC America, LG Electronics USA, Microsoft, Motorola Mobility, and Samsung Electronics America. I said that all without any errors. How about that? Good job, Adam. Anyway, the FTC ordered these companies to provide information about how they issue security updates to address mobile device vulnerabilities. Now, this is what they must provide. 4 things. What factors they consider when deciding whether to patch a vulnerability. Detailed data on the mobile devices they've offered for sale since August of 2013. The vulnerabilities that have affected those devices and whether and when they patched the vulnerabilities. FTC members voted unanimously to issue the order under a section of their FTC Act. Now, it's part of the Commission's ongoing efforts to understand the security of consumers' mobile devices, which included a workshop 3 years ago and a follow-up public comment, period, in 2014. On Monday, John Wilkins, who is the FCC's Wireless Telecommunications Bureau Chief, he wrote to wireless carriers. I don't think he actually wrote a letter with a stamp on it. I'm sure he sent an email, but he wrote in some fashion. Anyway, he wrote to the carriers asking about their processes for releasing security updates. His letter is divided into 4 sections. General questions, questions about the development and release of security updates, consumer-specific questions, and questions specific to the Stage Fright Android bug. The letter was sent to AT&T, Verizon, TracFone, T-Mobile, US Cellular, and Sprint. The letters were sent, so I can't confirm what we've received. Can't confirm that we've received responses. And that, again, comes from John Wilkins. So you might ask, why are the FCC and FTC concerned about this? I certainly agree. I want to know what's going on with updates, so I'm all for this. Well, as you probably know, America's shift to mobile devices is increasing. Meanwhile, and this sometimes happens when it often happens when a certain kind of technology rapidly gains popularity, there's a fly in the ointment. Vulnerabilities associated with mobile operating systems, including the Stage Fright bug you might have heard about, which may affect 1 million Android devices worldwide. these vulnerabilities are increasing. Earlier this year, NorthBit detailed a new version of stage fright called Metaphor, which affects 3 in 10 Android devices. Delays in patching vulnerabilities could leave consumers unprotected for long periods, according to the FCC. Operating system providers, as well as original equipment manufacturers, known as OEMs, and mobile service providers, have addressed vulnerabilities as they arise, but there are some major delays in delivering patches to devices, and older devices might never get patched. Carriers may delay updates because they first want to test them for reliability and compatibility with their own software and apps. Rob Enderle, now there's somebody we quote regularly because he knows what's going on. He said the carriers are saying that maintaining a base of unique features is more important than the consumer's safety and security. He said this should not be an either-or problem, but since they make it that, safety and security should come first. Now, nearly 28 million Android devices with medical apps are likely to have high-risk malware, further complicating this issue. 26% of Android devices worldwide run Android 4.3, which in computer years is old. It was released in 2013. And, you know, computer years are faster than dog years, so 3 years is making it a little bit long in the tooth, as they say. Now, neither the original equipment manufacturers, the OEMs, nor operating system providers want to update older devices or versions of the operating system. And that's partly because of the cost, and partly because older devices don't have the muscle to run new versions of Android. However, operating system suppliers and original equipment manufacturers want the patches to be applied quickly, according to Rob Enderle, and that could lead to a massive reduction in control by the carriers. He said government's first focus is on their citizens, and right now those citizens are badly exposed as a result of the carriers' ill-conceived practices. Mike Jude, we quote him regularly, and he's from Straightcast Frost and Sullivan. He said, the FCC is asserting regulatory oversight in this area, so everybody has to file plans for rolling updates, and it's going to slow things down. We look at compliance. Is it important? And in this case, yeah, I am all for this. I want to know what's going on with the updates and if they're needed, not needed, and the reason why they are in existence. I don't want to just press the button that says it's okay to update my phone. I want to know what's going on. Mike Jude said the vendors will probably take them to court because regulatory oversight will increase costs. It'll slow down maintenance of devices, and it'll force vendors to support archaic devices and make the cost of updating unmaintainable. So a wrinkle in the updating of mobile devices. And I think this will certainly be taking shape and, I would say, evolving for the foreseeable future. You are listening to the Adam the Computer Guy radio show, a twice-weekly feature here on Marion's Talking Place, WWGH 107.1 on your FM dial.
Do you ever ponder? Do you ever wonder? Do you ever question? In my server serving me, your computer will print. Should you call the president? What in the world are you gonna do? Call Adam, the computer guy. Call Adam, don't know the reason why. Do you find it a waste of time? Because you cannot hear online. Call Adam, the computer guy. Or go online at thecomputerguy.com. There's a click of a mouse.
I guess one thing that we've seen become easier by the magic and power of technology and the internet in general is the ability to sign documents electronically. For example, in real estate, you can make an offer on a property and sign electronically. You can electronically sign PDFs and other documents, but many things still need to be notarized. So you ask, can notarizing, I guess that's a word, can that be done electronically? Well, the answer is yes. How about this? There's a company called Notarize.com, and they note that there are over 1 billion documents notarized in the United States every year. Now, on Notarize.com's website, they note that despite its continued importance, the notary industry is remarkably antiquated and has not kept pace with the needs of today's dramatically evolved mobile tech-enabled economy. Software can improve every aspect of the notary industry and process, from the inconvenience of finding and meeting an agent in person to the lack of identity verification tools to archaic paper journal record keeping. Notarize addresses each of these challenges in a transformative way. Now, Notarize.com says that they are the first on-demand remote electronic notary service valid in all 50 states and Washington, D.C. Now, 5 years ago, the state of Virginia passed a bill which allows for appropriately certified Virginia notaries to complete remote notarization via a live video call. Furthermore, a document remotely notarized in Virginia is valid across state lines. Notarize.com leverages these and other laws to offer people and businesses the ability to legally notarize documents electronically from almost anywhere. So how about that? One of the relics of the non-electronic method of communication, getting something notarized, that can now take the appropriate leap and be done by the power and magic of the computer and electronic communication. We'll keep an eye on this story. I certainly find it intriguing. As a business owner, I do occasionally need to get things notarized, and I wouldn't mind trying the electronic notarization method. Here on the Adam the Computer Guy Show, we keep you informed on the latest and greatest in technology advances and news. Thanks a lot for listening. Hey, visit my website, AdamTheComputerGuy.com. Turning to an interesting and somewhat scary story related to privacy. Privacy when you're on the bus. Now, check this out. In Maryland, not everybody may know that many of Maryland Transit Administration's buses can record conversations. According to the Washington Post and Baltimore Sun, the state Senate is now considering a bill that would limit this snooping. Maryland Senator Robert Zirkin, a Democrat, told the Post that what the Maryland Transit Administration is doing is a mass surveillance. Now, this has been going on for 4 years. About two-thirds of Maryland's 750 buses now have the capability, according to the Washington Post. Signs in the vehicles tell passengers their conversations may be recorded. The authorities view those signs as representing consent. Now, currently, there's no stipulation that the devices should be switched on by the driver, only when there's a safety concern. Now, this, among other things, is what the new bill is trying to bring into law. Now, that's an effort that's been going on since 2012 and failing since the recording began. The recording devices were inserted into the buses without legislative approval. At the time, officials said they'd received legal advice that the recordings did not violate the state's wiretapping law. This, to some, was quite a, let's say, snow job. Those who support the recording say it's intended to help investigate crimes as well as accidents and customer service issues. Some also point to Homeland Security. Clearly, supporters say when there is an incident like a passenger or a driver misbehaving, it's good to have audio. Moreover, not everyone is keen to go on record as a witness when something does occur. Witnesses can also have conflicting views of what happened. Having audio on top of video, which vehicles also have, gives investigators added objective evidence. Now, Senator Zirkin told the Washington Post, "I can make an argument to tape everybody, everywhere they walk, everywhere they talk, and you can make the excuse for Homeland Security, but that is not a valid reason to encroach this fundamentally on people's privacy rights." WYPR Radio reports that Maryland Transit Authority Chief of Staff Jim Knighton told lawmakers, "The audio is listened to only when an incident occurs." A Transit Authority spokeswoman told the Baltimore Sun that only the relevant portion of a recording is saved and that audio is taped over when the storage drive is full. The Maryland Transit Authority said it could not comment on the specifics of the amendments being proposed, as it had not been given their precise language. But it offered statistics that incidents of assault and theft on their buses fell from 356 in 2012 to 108 in 2015. An MTA spokesperson said this legislation prohibits a proven effective public safety tool and puts students and all MTA riders at greater risk. And again, a controversial topic there, your privacy versus your safety. I'm not even quite sure how I feel. I like how the incidents have been reduced by 2/3, but I kind of value my privacy when I pay a fare to ride the bus. And can you really trust what they're saying about what they're going to tape, what they're going to tape over? I'm not quite sure. University of Maryland law professor Mark Graber told WIPR, "Given how many conversations take place and the incredibly minute percentage that are of legitimate interest to government, it would seem to me that government has to give a more specific reason about why you would want to tape people." So again, how do we draw the line? An interesting story as technology becomes more a part of people's lives and we look at privacy invasion versus safety and ease of investigation. We'll certainly follow these types of stories as they are an item of interest on the Adam the Computer Guy radio show. Of course, feel free to email me and let me know your opinion, as it certainly is valued. Again, in my case, I'm a little bit unsure. I'm not quite certain how I feel, so I'm going to mull this over the next few days, and I'm sure I'll have a comment or two in shows that are coming up later this month. There you go. Send me an email. That's what I wanted to say. I'd love to hear from you. Get out the old keyboard or touchpad or voice recognition software. Either or. You can email me, adam@lep.fm. That goes directly to my office, and I'll be happy to respond to you, oftentimes within an hour or two. Love to hear from my listeners. You can also visit my website. Get my contact information, telephone number, all that good stuff. AdamTheComputerGuy.com.
Adam Lep! Well, that'll do it for me. Thank you so much for tuning in. But do not touch that virtual listening gadget or your radio or your car radio, however you're listening, thank you so much for being part of our family. Charlie Evers, our local radio legend, is up next following the 10 o'clock features. And in about 2 hours and 15 minutes, we have a wrestling extravaganza with Scott Spears. Adam Lepp here. Thank you for listening. AdamTheComputerGuy.com.